Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. A couple years ago in Deadwood, the remains of a young man between the ages of 18 and 24 were uncovered during repair on a retaining wall behind a residential home. The house was at the site of the original Deadwood Cemetery, and this is the same cemetery where Wild Bill Hickok was first buried before being moved to Mount Moriah. The young man was found with a substantial dental work, unusual for the time, which may assist in identifying him, his ancestry, and where he came from. Mike Runge is archivist for the city of Deadwood, and he joins us on the line. And Mike, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thank you.
Also with us is Dr. Diane French. She's director of the Human Identification Laboratory in Fort Collins, Colorado. And Diane, thanks for joining the program as well.
My pleasure.
Well, Mike, we'll start with you. This body was at the site of the old original Deadwood Cemetery?
The original cemetery in Deadwood, and what I'm talking about, the original cemetery, this was the very first cemetery that was established in what is now the city limits of Deadwood. It was started up, we're not exactly sure of the date or the first individual that was interred in this cemetery, but we figured it was right around 1875 or 1876. And it was actually located on a mountainous bench up just right below where the present-day Mount Moriah Cemetery is located. And it's kind of an interesting cemetery in the sense that we have Western gunfighter James Butler Hickok that was buried there. But in addition to that as well, we had about 100 other individuals that we believe were buried in that cemetery before it was closed and Mount Moriah was created in 1878.
And those not all the bodies were moved?
Well, this is the thing. Unfortunately, you have to take it in the context of what was happening during that period of time. We had individuals that were out here that were against the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty, and they were basically violating being out on the lands. So the records that they had at that particular time were next to none. Most of the records that we were able to locate on this cemetery originated from the newspaper, which first started in June 8, 1876. So we had to go through the newspapers and try to piece together who was actually buried there. Now, most of the records that we know about this particular cemetery were also written after the fact, and that would have happened in 1878 when the county, Lawrence County, was first established. And people started looking at who was buried there, and then eventually there was the push to exhume the remains and have those individuals move to Mount Moriah Cemetery or other cemeteries in the Black Hills as well.
So this one body would have been one left behind then?
Possibly. There's been when we started working on this project, there was listings of individuals who were originally buried in the cemetery and that were exhumed and moved up to Mount Moriah. That showed up in the Lawrence County death record, which was established in 1878, again, after the fact with this particular cemetery. Unfortunately, Deadwood's first cemetery really wasn't kept up. There was a push in 1880 to put a fence around the cemetery. However, Lawrence County, followed by the city of Deadwood, began to take efforts to locate remains and move them up to Mount Moriah Cemetery. Unfortunately, if there was a wood marker or if the grave was unmarked, they may have been overlooked at that point in time. What we've been seeing is over the course of 100 years, individuals were discovered through work, whether it would be utility work or putting in a new foundation, and you'd see individuals that were discovered in the general area of this first cemetery. So this isn't something that just happened. I mean, it's been going on for about 100 years, but it's, like I said, just recently here in the last 10 years, we've discovered two individuals that were associated with this first cemetery.
Now, this body, after it was discovered, then one of the first steps was to send it to Dr. French in Colorado. Is that right, Mike?
That is correct. We actually partnered with the South Dakota State Archaeological Research Center, and we had two state archaeologists that were up there monitoring. We knew this area had a potential of possibly having human remains based on what we discovered in 2006 with the first burial. That general area, the old cemetery, was about 3 acres. It made up about 3 acres of land. And again, we knew that we had a high probability that there might be something discovered here, so we wanted to make sure we had all the steps taken and we had the state up there monitoring the site. And it just so happened that, again, in 2012, we discovered this particular individual. It turned out it was Murphy's Law. It was the last hour of the last day of monitoring, and that's when the discovery was made.
Well, Diane, when you got to the body, what is it that you found out? How much information could you glean about who this young man might have been?
Well, I start out with a biological profile, and so I would not be able to come up with any particular name. But this individual was remarkably complete. It was in fragments, but it was really very complete. And so I could determine the sex of the individual and the age, the ancestry of the individual. You know, a lot of people talk about the race of an individual, but we are talking more, as a forensic anthropologist, we're talking more about the ancestry of the person. Where did the ancestors come from? From a European base or an African base or an Asian base, that kind of thing. But so we could determine that. And then also I would try to look for evidence of the circumstances surrounding death. I didn't really find very much on this individual about the circumstances surrounding death. No gunshot wounds, no sharp injury, no blunt trauma. All the fragments were caused by postmortem pressure on the body. The coffin collapsed, the ground surface just collapsed onto the body, and just over time, the pressure just fragmented some of the bones.
So you're limited in how much you could find? I mean, is it just sort of the basic information that you're able to glean from looking at the body?
Well, on this particular body, yes. I could determine the sex was male. I could determine the age was late teens, early 20s. I could determine that he was of European ancestry, that is, he's Caucasian. I could see that he had significant dental work, and I understand that a dentist will be involved in trying to locate where these fillings may have come from, on what part of the country, and determine a little bit more about the fillings and so on. But so I can determine the biological profile, that the age and sex and the ancestry. But in this individual, like I say, if he had had a gunshot wound, I would probably be able to determine that. If that part of the body had been present or was present, like I say, this individual was pretty complete, then I would be able to determine that, yes, that is consistent with a perimortem or around the time of death gunshot wound. If he had had blunt trauma, the fracture patterns in fresh bone would mean perimortem. The fracture patterns in fresh bone are very different from fracture patterns caused after death when the ground pressure just causes the fragmentation. So this individual had that kind of post-mortem fracture that was caused by ground pressure, and I didn't see any evidence whatsoever of any kind of perimortem blunt trauma. Also, there was no evidence of sharp injury, no evidence of him being struck with a knife or any other kind of a sharp instrument. So that kind of information just wasn't there. That does not mean, however, that this person did not die of a gunshot wound or sharp injury. It just means that if that was an occurrence, if he did die by a gunshot wound, it was a gunshot wound that didn't nick a bone. And, of course, that's possible, too. I'm just dealing with a skeleton here, obviously. And so if he died from sharp injury of a stab wound to the midsection that didn't strike bone, I would not be able to see it, obviously.
Well, Mike Runge, any clues at all? Are you able to narrow down any sort of possibilities as to who this young man might have been?
Well, as Dr. France said, I mean, the evidence there for any type of trauma, it's kind of limited. To know who the individual is, that's going to be the million-dollar question, is trying to figure out if we can even determine who this individual was. Just based on what we know at this point in time, and quite a bit of this would be then dealing with the dental work that this individual had performed to him, we believe it's a person that must have had some money. Typically, dental work in frontier settings such as Deadwood, If a person had a bad tooth, they would have probably extracted the tooth at that point in time. But, I mean, the fact that this individual had 9 fillings, 3 of which were gold and 6 were an amalgam silver filling, that leads us to believe that he must have come from somewhere that this would have been, you know, performed at that point in time. What's interesting about it, and that's kind of what that's the big enigma and question that we have here as well too, is dental work at this point in time was relatively new, and so, you know, someone that would have undergone this amount of dental work, that really kind of shows that, you know, we have a chance of possibly finding out maybe where this individual originated from based on doing further testing. But ultimately, like I said, to establish who he was and how he died, we're hoping that we might get a breakthrough on that. But at this point in time, you know, we're just kind of seeing what will happen as we continue down this path.
Well, Mike, we only have a minute left here, but what are the next steps down that path?
Well, we're planning on doing a spectrum analysis on the actual fillings themselves to determine whether or not the gold was from the Black Hills or was from California. We're also looking at doing isotopic analysis, which will allow us to figure out what type of oxygen isotopes the individual had within his molar. That would provide us with a location as to where the individual may have been born. In addition to that, we're also looking at doing a facial reconstruction as well. Dr. France created a casting, of this individual, which we will have a forensic artist do a composite. So ultimately, it's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. We're going to try to piece this individual back together the best we can, and hopefully, through modern technology, we might be able to learn more about, you know, an early inhabitant that once was out here in Deadwood. But more particular, maybe we'll be able to find a name or even a location of where he came from.
Well, Mike, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday. And Diane, thanks for your time as well.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much. That's Mike Runge, archivist for the City of Deadwood, and Diane French is director of the Human Identification Laboratory on Fort Collins, Colorado. And that's it for this edition of Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Thanks to all of our guests on today's show. Steven Zwemke is the producer. We had assistance from Nathan Poole. Actually, we had assistance from Chris Loffrey, sorry. Coming up tomorrow, we'll discuss the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies, and we'll talk with the director of a documentary about a group of Indian hobbyists from France that visits the Pine Ridge Reservation. That's tomorrow at noon Central, 11 Mountain, right here on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Here and Now.